Good afternoon and welcome to this month's Lunch and Learn webinar on Big Data Analytics. I'm Sue McLean and I'm of counsel in our technology group here in London. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Alex van der Volk, who is one of our privacy partners based out of our Berlin office. As we say, we have these every month. Next month we have Tom McQuill and Andreas Grunwald talking about EU antitrust law on the 11th of May. And we hope you can join us for that session too. It's the usual drill for these sessions. We are going to have the lines muted during the webinar, but we'll unmute at the end so that we can take questions. So during the next 45 minutes, we will provide a quick overview of some of the key issues you need to consider when embarking on a big data project here in Europe. And here's the agenda on the slide. So why don't we kick off with an introduction to big data? It's been likened to oil, gold, a new currency for the digital era. But if we cut through the hype, what is it and what does it really mean for business? I think we know that organizations have always accumulated information. But nowadays, the amount of data being generated and retained is growing exponentially each year. And likewise, you know, data analysis is certainly not new. We've always carried it out as businesses. But historically, we might not have been able to extract value from the data that all of the data that we held, particularly because it was difficult to do so where data was unstructured. The difference is now we have new technologies which help us manage and analyze data, whether it's new database technologies such as Hadoop. We also have advanced data mining software, and very importantly, we now have relatively cheap and certainly more user-friendly analytical tools. And all these technologies allow us to draw data from a potentially wide variety of data sets that perhaps historically weren't designed to be combined, and we can apply tools and processes to these data sets to see if we can identify meaningful new correlations in the data. So, quick summary, big data is still just data. It's just that we've got an awful lot more of it and we can derive a lot more value from the data that we have. And of course, it's not just about personal data. There are lots of applications of big data analytics that don't involve data relating to individuals at all. For example, you know, across wide fields and sectors such as energy, mining, manufacturing, technology, science, etc. And I think the potential benefits of big data analytics are now much more generally accepted across business. And I've set out some of these on the slide. Certainly can help give a better understanding of a business and its customers, help companies to forecast and make better decisions, to help companies inform their business strategy and tailor products. And although there is certainly focus on using analytics to help drive efficiencies, productivity, and cost savings, they're also being used to help not just grow existing business, but create new revenue streams and help companies deliver competitive advantage. And it does now seem that almost every company is becoming a data company. There was a recent Capgemini report just issued last month where they surveyed sort of senior decision makers and C-suite executives across 9 regions and 9 industries to see where the big data market was heading. And I thought there were some interesting statistics in there. About 50% of the respondents said that their company had already implemented big data technology or was in the process of doing so. And then a further 21% planning to begin implementation within the next year. A high percentage, 65%, felt that their companies risked becoming irrelevant or uncompetitive if they didn't embrace big data. And in fact, a very similar percentage considered that actually monetization of data could eventually become as valuable to their companies as their existing products and services. And lastly, a similar percentage, 64%, said that big data was actually changing the traditional business boundaries, and they felt it was enabling non-traditional providers to move into their industry. And certainly here in the UK, we have seen a whole host of startups in the fintech space, for example, whose business model is reliant on the use of big data analytics. But it's certainly not just companies that have identified the value in big data, as Alex will touch on now.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. My name is Alex. I will spend a couple of minutes on the privacy side of things of big data. Before I do so, I want to point the attention towards the initiatives of the EU. As Sue pointed out, it's not just companies that are discovering the potential of big data. It's also state-regulated institutions and most notably the European Commission. They have launched a big data strategy, which is aimed at innovation and growth and making sure that the EU is set at par to compete where it relates to big data in the global market. And very specifically, they have joined forces with the data industry to pledge a joint investment of 2.5 billion euro in this area, which is a huge number, and of which 500 million has been pledged by the European Commission. So it tells that in the EU, at a very high level, there is a strong commitment to making the economic benefit and potential prosper and come to effect, which is interesting also in light of the privacy regulation that is being debated by the European Commission and the Parliament, which will come a bit later in the presentation. And also individual countries are focusing on big data. The UK has publicly announced that it has ambitions to be the world leader on big data analytics and initiatives, and has also pledged millions in terms of investment in that area. Turning the attention to the privacy side of things, if you look at the European framework, European privacy framework, it's comprised of a number of regimes. Most notably, as you may all know, in the EU we have the Data Protection Directive, which is still currently in full force and effect, pending an update to the framework in the form of the privacy regulation. But until that time, we have the directive, which has been implemented in national law. And that gives us, at least from a European point of view, some guidance as to how to interpret big data analytics endeavors related to privacy aspects of that. And in the wake thereof, you have the Article 29 Working Party, which is the body in which all the national data protection authorities are convened and they issue common and joint opinions. There's three opinions that are of relevance to big data analytics, which is the opinion on purpose limitation, anonymization, and legitimate interest. And then at a national level, there's country-specific guidance. Turning to the directive, I think it's good also to always to start off with just the basic principles to get your mind refreshed in case that would be needed. The basic principles are that if you want to collect and process personal data, you need to have a legitimate ground. In the context of big data analytics, this will often be the legitimate interest of the data controller or the consent of the data subject. I will go into more detail about that in a minute. You have to think about your purposes. You have to clearly define for which purposes you are collecting personal data, and each purpose needs to be specific and explicit and legitimate. And in case there is further processing, which means that you are collecting and processing data for another purpose than for which it was originally acquired, it needs to be compatible with the primary purpose. And thirdly, and these are just the highlights. I mean, obviously the directive has many more requirements, but I think these are notably requirements in light of big data. The third requirement is that of proportionality. Data must not be excessive in relation to the purpose for which it was collected. It is sometimes referred to as data minimization, which means you can only process the minimum amount of data necessary for what you are doing. The way that it's framed in the directive is that it's not excessive, which more or less boils down to the same thing, but is sometimes not perceived quite the same. But that's for another time to comment on. Let's turn to the Article 29 Working Party. As indicated two slides ago, the European regime is made up by the directive, and we have opinions issued by the Article 29 Working Party, and until recently we did not have a general guidance, at least not issued by the WP29, on big data. They issued a statement in the fall of last year where they said we have not issued general guidance on big data on purpose. Because as far as we are concerned, as far as the WP29 is concerned, it is formed by the existing current framework. They emphasize that the directive in full force and effect applies to the collection and processing of big data, of personal data in the context of big data analytics, and they deem that their existing opinions, the opinions that they have already issued, provide sufficient guidance on how to address these topics. Turning to those opinions, if we look first at the opinion on legitimate interest, which is on the next slide, I think that is one of the most interesting opinions of the Article 29 Working Party in the context of big data. It is stated on the slide that is often overlooked. I don't mean to imply that the opinion itself is overlooked, but especially overlooked in the context of big data. What you see is that the general tendency or conclusion, if you will, for big data to be able to take place is that consent from the data subject is required. Now, that may very well be so. Consent is a valid legal ground, and if you have consent, you can process and analyze data also in the context of big data analytics. But as the Article 29 Working Party states quite explicitly, is that consent is not always a suitable ground, and in some cases, legitimate interest may be better suited. And if you look at the quote, they specifically deem this to be the case where there would be what they call an inappropriate use of consent. Now, as you might know, the consent requires that it's given freely and specifically, and is also given informed. And what the Article 29 Working Party is concerned about is where the individual is not in a position to give consent according to these requirements, either that it's not given freely, or that it's not given specifically, or not given informed. What you also see is that what they call the consent paradox, the more options of consent that are presented to data subjects, the least they are actually willing to exercise their right to consent. I think a great example there is the cookie example where, you have to provide consent for cookies and, we get all these pop-ups all the times on websites, whereas, the general public now just clicks on accept and on yes, simply to get rid of those pop-ups, without maybe expressing validly or specifically that they consent to the use of those cookies. I think it's interesting to see whether or not, in the case of big data analytics, consent is indeed maybe the most suitable ground, or whether we can also base certain types of data analytics on the ground of legitimate interest. Just zooming in on the legitimate interest ground and how that needs to be applied, it's a balancing of interests. On the one hand, the interest of the data controller carrying out the big data analytics, and on the other hand, the impact on the privacy of the individual. And the opinion which was issued early last year, I think, provides very valuable elements as to how the balancing or how these two interests need to be weighed. The opinion gives specific elements that need to be reviewed, such as the nature of the data, whether it's regular data or regular personal data or sensitive personal data. It requires us to look at the status of the data controller, whether the data controller, for instance, is an attorney or a physician having, an important position in relation to the data subject, or whether the data controller is a big company, a big multinational company that would, against which the individual would not have a lot of bargaining power, for instance, or whether there's a relationship of dependency, for instance, with energy suppliers or financial institutions. These are all aspects that can be taken into account to determine whether or not the interest of the the privacy interest of the individual needs to weigh more heavily than the legitimate interest of the data controller. But what's interesting is that the Article 29 Working Party mentions that it's not only a cost that is comprised of which the interest is comprised, but also benefit. If there are clear societal benefits or other benefits that are in the public interest, these may be taken into account in doing the balancing. So it puts weight on the scale, and I think that's the general point I'm trying to make, is that you have to look when you're doing a legitimate interest analysis, look at all the aspects that come into play, and there make a balancing of these interests to see how it turns out. And also here, it's very explicitly stated that the balancing test is contextual, so you also have to look at the expectations of the data subject, which is what they also refer to as surprise minimization. The data subject, the individual, should not be surprised by what is coming at him or her. So the processing, the analytics carried out, need to be expected. I think that's one of the aspects that is put heavy weight in the scale as opposed to the other aspects. Then if the outcome, going to the next slide, if the outcome of the balancing test would be in favor of the individual, it doesn't have to mean the end of the exercise. You can still look for applying mitigating measures to bring back the balance. Mitigating measures explicitly are referred to as, for instance, and these are not limitative, but they are suggestions, data minimization. So here you see the question, can we do with less data than we emphasize? Do we really need everything that we're trying to include and incorporate here? Anonymization and pseudonymization, to which I bring to your attention the opinion on anonymization, where, again, the Article 29 Working Party gave quite specific circumstances on what they deem to be required in order to speak of anonymized, truly anonymized data. Enhanced control for the data subject instead of just the mere access rights that they are given under the directive. And enhanced control means, for instance, the dashboard where you can tweak your own settings and update your preferences and update your personal data as required. Transparency, a functional separation within the company between the departments carrying out the analytics and the ones applying the outcome of the analytics, and the use of data privacy impact assessments. Now, if you go through this, and time doesn't permit us to do this in full detail, but if you go through this, I think there is a part of big data analytics that can be based on legitimate interest. Notably, where big data analytics is used for business intelligence, so creating aggregated reports about how your company or how your products are doing or how the sentiment of the market is, where the output of the analytics is not, it is in general aggregated output, not individualized, I think that there is a possibility for doing this on the basis of legitimate interest, where you apply the mitigating measures to alleviate any impact on the individual. Once you start applying those outcomes on an individualized basis, so where you are targeting, for instance, customers or employees, based on the outcome of the analytics that has taken place, the impact increases, and likely you will end up in a scenario of consent. But it's not an all or nothing exercise. It's not black and white. I think there are definitely uses and certain applications of analytics that can be based on the legitimate interest, and where that, in fact, actually may be a more suitable and appropriate ground than consent. Turning to the next aspect of the next privacy aspect, purpose limitation, what is notably meant here is what will happen often when you carry out big data analytics is that you have a database that was already acquired, potentially, and you want to carry out the analytics for the data in the database. Well, then you run into the issue of purpose limitation and using it for a different purpose than for which it was originally acquired. For instance, if you have a customer database, that collected for the or comprised of a loyalty program or other registrations, then the issue of compatibility comes into play, which means you have to look at whether the new purpose is compatible with the original purpose. If this is not the case, you may have to go back to the individual, ask for consent, or you have to look for a different legitimate ground to carry out big data analytics. But it is something that to be mindful of and not automatically use all of the databases without doing this assessment on whether it's possible. There is guidance also on a national level, turning to the next slide, and I just want to mention the guidance provided by the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK. They were one of the first, if not the first, national data protection authority to issue a guidance document. It was issued last year. And it's been published. You can access it through their website. They held a public consultation pursuant to the guidance. The consultation ended in the fall of last year. It's not really sure what the outcome of that is going to be. As of yet, the guidance is what we have, and it sits very much aligned with the opinions from the Article 29 Working Party. So the ICO doesn't really say something new as opposed to the opinions, but they do place it in the perspective of big data analytics, which I think is useful. It's notably readable. So if you're engaging in big data analytics, it is one of those documents to take into account. Looking ahead, because I think that's something that has spurred the debate on big data analytics, looking ahead to the regulation, it's somewhat of a, I wouldn't go as far as a black hole, but it is somewhat ambiguous as to where this is going. If you look at the discussions surrounding big data analytics, and the way it's called in the regulation is profiling, where you look at the characteristics of an individual and use that to base decisions on that will affect the individual. That's the definition of profiling that is introduced in the regulation. The latest discussions tend to lean towards consent as the only basis for being able to carry out big data analytics, as discussed in the context of the regulation. There were very heavy debates about this. It's a topic that is very much at the top of the agendas of not only regulators, but also EU politicians, and they use this as a, how you say, focal point in the discussions on the regulation. The status quo is, if we were to end up with consent as being the only basis on which big data analytics could be carried out, it would not only mean a departure from the current framework, where we see that Article 29 Working Party clearly states it can also be done on the basis of legitimate interest, but also, and that's why I pointed the attention to the EU initiatives earlier on in the presentation, it sits quite at attention at, you know, with those investments, the economic investments that are being made by the EU. You can't say on the one hand we're investing, I don't know how many millions in, you know, fostering and promoting the use of big data analytics from an economic point of view, and then at the same time use your privacy reform to restrict any possible uses and circumstances under which you can carry it out. I think that's something that, you know, will be taken into account, but it's interesting to see how that will be taken into consideration when the regulation will further progress. I'll be happy to go into further details surrounding what is in the regulation on profiling. It's on the slide. I won't spend too much time on it. I for one, don't think that the last word has been said on this in the context of the discussions on the regulation. It's still being debated. It's not finalized yet. Once it is finalized, we'll have a 2-year implementation period. We're hopeful to have some progress, maybe even finalization this year. But as of yet, it's still under discussion. So two more comments to make in the context of privacy, not very hard with regard to rules and requirements, but just to point your attention towards, first, the creep factor, which is you may very well be within the limits and boundaries of law carrying out your big data analytics, but something to very much take into consideration is how this will land with the individual, with your customers or your employees. And this is what is referred to as the creep factor. Often, especially when these things are carried out and maybe not informed about very detailed or not being very transparent about it, it will be perceived as creepy. And to give you a very real example, coming from the Netherlands, where last year financial institution ING introduced a pilot program to analyze the bank statements or bank account statements from its customers to make them individualized offers. And they may very well have been within the limits of the law, and they said they were going to ask for consent and they were transparent about it, but it caused a huge uproar not only within society but also in politics and with various regulators. It shows the creep factor. It shows that individuals, consumers, are concerned about these kinds of things, and being compliant with the law is not the only aspect to take into account. You also have to take into account how will this resonate with that target audience, with the employees or the customers. So that's one thing. The other thing I think is privacy as a differentiator, or also referred to as privacy as a competitive advantage. You can use this to your benefit as a company, knowing that this is at the heart of individuals, giving them increased control, being more than necessary, maybe transparent about what you're doing, may create a sense of trust with the customer or with your employees. Trust, I think, is a very important cornerstone of building any relationship, notably a consumer relationship or customer relationship in that respect. You will need data in order to carry out big data analytics. And it is a fact that is shown through research that the more your consumers, your customers trust you, the more they are willing to share that data with you for instance, analytics purposes. This is what's referred to as the competitive advantage, where you use privacy not only to be minimally compliant with rules and requirements, but using it as a tool in order to achieve that trust with the consumer and to be able to carry out your analytics endeavors. So I will now hand it back to Sue, who will highlight some other legal issues that are relevant in the context of big data analytics.
Thanks, Alex. Now, quite understandably, as Alex has run us through, the privacy issues with big data tend to get the most headlines and be the most attention-grabbing. But there are a range of other legal issues you need to consider when embarking on a big data project, and I've included some of the issues on the slide. If we take the first one, it's kind of, you know, obviously absolutely no-brainer that if you're carrying out whatever type of big data project it is, you need to comply with the relevant law and regulation that might apply. And certainly these are not the only examples, but I just wanted to touch on a few examples here. So firstly, industry-specific regulation. And if I take the financial services sector as an example, you know, here in the UK, you may be a financial services company that wants to use big data analytics to help target your customers, perhaps to price policies for customers better if you're an insurance company. But you still need to comply with all the relevant rules. For example, those dealing with treating customers fairly and being transparent in the way policies are priced. And certainly the regulators have big data analytics on their radar. I mean, here in the UK, the financial services regulator, the FCA, hasn't issued any specific guidance on big data, but it has recognised the increased use of big data analytics in the sector in its latest risk outlook. And similarly, consumer protection, given the use of big data analytics in terms of targeting customers or considering how to price particular customers, concerns have been raised in terms of trying to avoid misleading or unfair practices by companies through their use of big data analytics. For example, there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence here in the UK around personalised pricing. Consumers are saying, you know, I'm buying something off the internet and I seem to be getting a different price if I log in on my desktop versus my Mac computer. Or, you know, I seem to be getting a higher price if I log in from work, which is a more affluent area, versus where I live at home, or vice versa. And so the OFT, which is the UK's former consumer protection regulator, investigated this whole issue back in 2013. But at that time, although they said that certain companies could be a bit more transparent about their use of data, it didn't find any evidence of harmful behaviour at that time. But certainly the issues remain on their radar. And earlier this year, the successor to the OFT, the Competition and Markets Authority here in the UK, published a call for information asking businesses to try to get a better understanding of the benefits, concerns, and the risks relating to consumer data collection and use. And approaching the subject certainly from its position as a consumer protection regulator, but also as the new UK Competition Authority. And then if we take another different example, you know, certainly if you're using data analytics in the recruitment and HR context, you'll still need to ensure compliance with relevant employment and labour law, in particular around discrimination. You can certainly imagine a scenario where you bake sort of discriminatory keywords or concepts into your algorithms, and that leads to discriminatory analysis. And also, because of unconscious bias, you may have to sort of reverse engineer your results to, you know, that result looks discriminatory. Perhaps I need to go back and look at my algorithms again. So there's just a few examples. Next, and this is a very important question, obviously when you're talking about data, is who owns the intellectual property rights in the data, both the input data you're using in your project and also the results of the analysis? Because inevitably, your big data analytics involves copying and processing the data. Now, clearly there's a variety of potential intellectual property rights that may subsist in the data. And here in the EU, we also have the database right, which is not available everywhere. As you know or may know, this is an automatic right, and it subsists in a database if there has been a substantial investment in importantly obtaining, verifying, or presenting the contents of the database. But whether a database right attaches to a data set in a particular big data project will not always be particularly clear-cut. So particularly if your project involves any third-party involvement, I think you would definitely want to have appropriate contractual protections in place and not just simply rely on the fact that you would have any form of database right protection. But ultimately, the key issue is, are your ownership and license rights in the data wide enough to cover what you want to do with that data for your big data project? And certainly if you're using data provided by a third party, you'll need to ensure that the licensor owns the IP in the data set and has the rights to license it to you. And clearly most data sets will be subject to some form of controls in relation to the use. And so you need to identify what those are. And given the nature of a big data project, you may be talking about a number of data sets from a whole variety of different sources. So it may not be that straightforward a task for you. In terms of protection, ideally you'll want warranties and indemnities from the third-party owner to protect you against IPR infringement or a breach of confidentiality type claim. And obviously, if you're going to use that data in a commercial service delivered on to customers, then similar assurances are going to be required or asked of you. Here I thought we would also just briefly touch on open data. As with open source software, there are different license types available for open data, whether that's a public domain license, an attribution license, or what's known as an attribution and share-alike license. And you may have heard and be familiar with the Creative Commons and the Open Data Commons licenses. But the key thing is you really need to identify, if you're using open data, what license terms apply and what the restrictions or requirements are in relation to its use. Lastly, of course, increasingly, you may not have bought the data at all. You may have mined it from public sources, from public websites, which is increasingly ubiquitous. Obviously, you just need to be aware about the risks of doing that for the business. Could it constitute an IPR infringement? Could it constitute a breach of the website in question's terms and conditions, or even a breach of relevant applicable law? For example, here in the UK, although it's not been tested in court, arguments that scraping could be in breach of the Computer Misuse Act, which prohibits unauthorised access of computer systems. Worth touching on briefly, we've done an article on it if you want more information. Ryanair and PR Aviation was a recent European Court of Justice case where they held that even if you don't have database rights in your website, the website owner can prohibit scraping via their terms and conditions. Cybersecurity, I mean, it's true whenever you're talking about any kind of data, cybersecurity is always going to be a key issue, whether it's personal data or trade secrets or confidential information or systems. But obviously, the more data you hold and the more valuable that data is, the potentially more vulnerable you are to cyber attack. And also in the case of analytics, you may have an increased reliance on the use of external hosting providers and cloud computing solutions. So just need to be aware of that and make sure that you put applicable protections in place, particularly in your contracts with third-party providers. But the usual good practices will apply. Liability. I think here the key message is, you know, not to be seduced by big data's false charms. In a huge data set, there may well be spurious correlations. And correlation also doesn't mean causation. You know, big data could be bad data. It could be fragile in terms of how accurate it is, both in terms of the reliability of the raw data and the results. And so you need to be very careful about the conclusions you draw if you need to rely on the big data analytics. If you take the example of the much heralded Google flu trends, which used big data to identify flu trends from web search data, when that was investigated, they identified that they'd got it wrong 3 years in a row. And if you take the example, much reported example of the situation where Target, the big store in the US, had started sending out coupons to women that they suspected were pregnant because of their shopping habits. But, you know, we never heard reported at that time, what about all the false positives? What about the people who may have received coupons who weren't pregnant? I mean, algorithms are not necessarily infallible. You still need human intervention and obviously absolutely vital to set up your input data and your algorithms correctly, but also very important to make careful analysis of the results. In terms of your protecting yourself, clearly if you're using third-party data, ideally you'd want back-to-back protection, but it may be difficult to get that protection, particularly if you're using open data that's being provided free of charge. And you may also want to consider protection via your insurance. Lastly, just very briefly, as it may not be relevant to a number of you, but I thought we should really touch on the competition risks. The kind of two aspects where competition may be relevant, first of all, or two key areas where it may be relevant. First of all, you know, if a company is data-rich, acquires another data-rich company, then that could trigger merger control or sort of abuse of dominant position concerns. Certainly, the high-profile merger acquisition between Google and DoubleClick back in 2008 and the more recent Facebook and WhatsApp transactions data was certainly taken into account in the relevant competition investigations, although in obviously both of those cases, the Commission cleared the transactions. On the other hand, competition law could also potentially be used by companies trying to access data from other parties. But either way, there's no question that it's on the radar of the competition authorities across Europe, and there's obviously an interplay between competition, consumer regulation, and data protection, as pointed out in the European Data Protection Supervisors Report, and the fact that now here in the UK, as I mentioned, the UK's sort of combined consumer protection, regulatory and competition authority is also exploring the issue. So in the time we've got left, we thought we'd just run through some quick practice tips for you if you're embarking on a big data project, and then we'll have hopefully some small amount of time for questions. So first of all, clearly if you're deciding you want to do a big data project at work, you really need to start with the basics. What is the aim of the project? What is the business issue the data will help solve? Then you need to decide what data you need for the project, and obviously a key consideration will be whether that data is personal data or otherwise. Identify where it's stored or processed, and what rights you have to process it. In terms of the data lifecycle, clearly if data are collected and used for different processes throughout your business, you need to understand who is responsible for the data at each stage, and what third-party players are involved or may be involved in the project. In terms of qualified resources, I just thought it was worth pointing out that obviously big data projects may have initiated historically perhaps from different departments of the company, but it's got to really be a multidisciplinary approach. It's not just an IT issue, it's, for example, not just a marketing issue. You need to pull together a team that has the key stakeholders across the business represented, and clearly involving legal early on to ensure that legal compliance is built in from the beginning. You just want to help ensure that your project is as well set up as possible. And certainly in that Capgemini report I mentioned earlier on in the webinar, only 27% of those surveyed described their existing big data initiatives as successful. I will now pass you on to Alex, who will give us a reminder of some of the data protection and privacy issues you need to think about.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. I think we need to change the slide on the webinar, or at least turn to practice tips. So in the context of privacy, I think the first question is, do we need personal data at all? It is definitely the area where a lot of, maybe even most of the big data analytics endeavors are taking place, right? It's a very valuable tool for evaluating personal traits and characteristics and doing predictions on that, but it's not a requirement. There's a lot of big data analytics projects that are taking place without personal data being involved, for instance, where it relates to weather or other kinds of metrics that are not identifiable to a person. So that's the first. Then the question whether how you are using the analytics and whether it's used to affect and map individual behavior, or whether it's aimed at creating overviews of general trends. You have to look at your responsibilities internally. It's what I earlier referred to as functional separation. I think that's a very powerful mitigating measure that is also being considered equally by the data protection authorities. And then your legal basis. You have to think about your legal basis. You have to document your legal basis. There are multiple legal bases that are applicable. One that I didn't touch upon is the execution for a contract. It's not ruled out that that may also be a basis for carrying out analytics, although it's not one that is most intuitive and will probably, possibly, in most circumstances, not be available. But again, it deserves thought. It can pay off to pay a thought, and is a requisite for carrying out your analytics where it relates to personal data. Turning to the next slide, when you think about purpose and introducing new purposes, think about purpose limitation. We touched about that. And with regard to your relationship towards customers and employees, think about how you're going to communicate this. You have the requirement under data protection laws to be to inform the individual, to be specific, to be complete, to be transparent. But here too, I'm alluding to the creep factor, the creepiness aspect. It can help to make this in simple terms, communicate it in simple terms. Be open about what you're doing. It's not something that needs to be it doesn't have to be covert. It doesn't have to be hidden. It's something that can be very well communicated in a consumer-friendly way, also in consumer-friendly wording. Which will only help you in the end in obtaining, you know, consent if that's the basis that you're going to apply, and in any event, contribute to being a mitigating measure in the realm of legitimate interest if that's the ground that you're using. With regard to notices and privacy policies, they don't have to be extremely lengthy. You can do this in intuitive terms, and the authorities very much welcome layered notices, especially where what they call the real estate is limited. If you're collecting data through a mobile phone, there's not a lot of space to inform and communicate about what you're doing. You may very well use layered notices and pictograms and other pictures to make the individual aware of what happens and what kind of analysis is taking place. Sue?
Thank you, Alex. And lastly, clearly be mindful of the non-privacy risks and issues too. And just a reminder of some of those on the slides. The other thing to point out is that it's always important to identify where analytics activity is happening in your business. There is increasingly it appears a lot of what is known as shadow IT happening in different companies, different departments, perhaps maybe doing analytics activity that you're not aware of. Certainly, again, in that recent report, 36% of those surveyed said that their business unit had circumvented IT in order to carry out the data analytics they require. So just trying to get a handle on what's happening in your business to mitigate the risk for the company is very important. And related to that, I think given the fact that more and more companies are using big data analytics across the business, to have a big data policy or checklist in place to make sure that everyone is aware of the issues they need to be thinking about if they're thinking about carrying out any form of big data analytics project and doing some training of your own is very helpful. I am going to now unmute all lines, and if you've got any questions, you can raise them. If not, you can always catch up with Alex and I separately. So, does anyone have any questions for us? I'll take that as a no. Certainly, Alex's details and my details are on the back, and we'd be delighted to speak to you or follow up by email with any specific questions you have, and we can make this recording, the recording of this webinar, available, and also the slides if you want to look at them again at your leisure or share them with colleagues. But thank you very much for listening, and we hope to we hope you can make next month's session on EU antitrust law. Thank you very much.